Welcome to Bitch Talk, booze interviews straight from the heart of San Francisco. This is Erin, that's Ange.
What up?
There's Char holding her mic and a drink. We are on location at one of our favorite bars. I don't even want to mention its name because it's sacred. We're actually at Specs Bar. It's one of our favorites. It's not that far from Char's studio, which is also a plus. It's literally down the street from Ange's house. One of our favorite bartenders is here tonight, Lucy. And, you can find us at bitchtalkpodcast.com. You can also find us at BFF.FM every Monday morning from 5:30 to 6 if you are up that early. I'm so sorry for you if you are.
Don't rub it in.
Yeah, so this time I got the opportunity because, as you've heard, if you are a regular listener to this podcast, and me and Char are on basically different planets of scheduling. And tonight it came together after a long work day for Ange and me, and Char had to drive in, but it was awesome because we're making it work. And we got an invitation to interview, I'm just going to call her the friend of the show now, Lulu Wong, the writer-director of the beautiful film, The Farewell.
She's going to get a serious bitch talk bump after this.
Just remember this, Lulu.
The second interview.
Just remember
that's a serious bump.
This moment in your life. Just kidding. but we were lucky enough to talk with her at the Sundance Film Festival earlier this year. I did not see that film at the time. Ange and our friend of the show, John Wildman of the Daily Buzz, got to see it.
We teared up together at the theater. Yeah.
So we interviewed her. I interviewed her just with like generic questions. But I couldn't wait to see the film. We got an invite when it was here in the Bay Area. Char and I and my boyfriend Jeff saw at the Castro.
We've both been so busy. I haven't really talked to you about what you thought of it.
No.
And all you heard was that it was my favorite.
Right. You're like, this is what I wanted Crazy Rich Asians to be. And I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, what is this movie? So, got invited to interview Lulu again without my co-pilot over here. But it's a different interview this time. Char mentioned that.
God is your co-pilot?
Dog is my co-pilot.
Anyway.
Anyways, got invited, obviously said yes, made it work. We were on location at Yank Sing with a beautiful spread of dim sum and got to meet the owner of Yank Sing, who I love. She was great. They probably did it there because food is a very big character in The Farewell.
Yeah.
Dim sum.
Yeah.
And
dim sum.
And, okay. And just like, yeah. And the shots of just not only just eating, but sitting at the round tables and having that shot of all the family. You'll know what I'm talking about when you see the film. Anyways, please enjoy this kind of part two interview with Lulu Wong. It's different. That's what Char said. That was her feedback in a good way.
You were able to talk about a little bit more behind the scene type stuff, you know, like backstory,
right,
that we didn't really get to elaborate on or anything like that.
Oh, that's great. I can't wait to hear it.
Well,
because that makes it more well-rounded, right? It's like, so you get a little taste, you get a little sprinkle me,
exactly. Sprinkle.
You learn about the movie. Right.
Part two.
And now it's more like we're really getting into it. So enjoy this interview with Lulu and we'll see you on the other side.
Welcome to Bitch Talk, booze and interviews straight from the heart of San Francisco. I'm Erin. We have a special guest today on the Bitch Talk podcast. We are at a special location. It's Yank Sing in San Francisco, kind of a historical family-run dim sum restaurant that I used to come to as a kid with my family. So this is a nice little revisit here with Lulu Wong. She's the director and writer of The Farewell. And she was on one of our podcasts at Sundance. So welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. If you can you let our audience know what The Farewell is?
The Farewell is a film that is loosely based on my own family. My grandmother was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer a few years ago and given about 3 months to live. But when I found this out, my family also told me that she doesn't know because the doctor told her sister and not her, which is pretty common in China. They'll tell the family members and let the family decide how and when it would be best to tell the patient. But in my case, my family decided it would be best not to tell her at all. And instead, as a way for us to all go back and see her without making her suspicious, they decided that my cousin should marry his girlfriend and have a wedding as a ruse for us to all unite and say goodbye to my grandmother.
As you do.
As you
do. Totally worked out. Can you talk about opening up this story and talking about it on NPR and how that came to be?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to make it as a film, you know, from the get-go. As a filmmaker, I had made a feature film before. I immediately thought that this should be a film, but at the time, you know, most people were asking me, well, is it a Chinese film or is it an American film?
Interesting.
And I would say American, but I would say it with a little bit of hesitation because I knew that I wanted it to be 100% Asian American cast, and it would be, you know, a large majority in Chinese Mandarin, which meant subtitled, because that's the language that my family speaks when we go back to China. And my lack of understanding of sometimes in that culture has much to do with the language. And so it's so integrated into the story, I can't take that out. And so then people would say, well, yeah, so then that's not an American film. Mm-hmm. And I would talk to Chinese investors and they would say, all right, if we made it as a Chinese film, then Billy can't be the main character because her perspective is too American and Chinese audiences are not going to connect with that. And so it kind of came back to those questions of like, what am I then? You know, Americans are telling me this is not an American film. Chinese people are saying like Billy's way too American. And so once again, I felt like I didn't fit in either places. And I kind of thought about quitting the film industry. You know, it was sort of this moment for me where I thought I'm never going to get to tell the stories as me, as who I actually am.
And you're not going to get funded.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Or I would always have a compromised vision that it's not worth it. You know, it's just too much time and energy and money to make films. So I set it aside for a while. I was going through this sort of crisis of careers. And that's when a producer from This American Life approached me because I had done a short film that was at film festivals that was made for very, very little money and, you know, supported by Film Independent, God bless them. and this producer, Neil Drumming, said, you know, I'm one of the few people of color that's going to be at This American Life. I do have an agenda. I want to, you know, find stories, find voices that have traditionally not been on This American Life. And he very much saw his own responsibility in that and sought me out and said, I love your voice, loved your film. What other stories do you have? Brought that to This American Life. Everyone loved it. You know, went ahead to write and narrate and record the episode. And then once it aired on This American Life, within 48 hours, producers were calling to make it into a film. And what was great about doing, the experience of This American Life was that it was such a pure experience of storytelling because it's not, you know, 5 years in the making of, and with millions of dollars. And it's also journalism. So the approach was very investigative. It came from a place of curiosity where the producers there were asking me questions as opposed to telling me what the story needed to be to fit a particular market. Mm-hmm. And that had never happened to me before. And so it was this huge paradigm shift for me where I thought, oh, I can actually explore stories by exploring them rather than thinking first about how I'm even going to get this made. Mm-hmm. And it furthered my belief that I should quit the film industry after doing This American Life, the first, you know, 24 hours after finishing the story, I was crying to a friend because I said, this was the most pure artistic storytelling experience I've ever had, and I think I'm in the wrong industry. I got to go into radio or something else.
Podcasting.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly, mm-hmm. You know, it's like me in a room with a microphone, and then within 48 hours, my voice is out there, and then millions of people heard the episode. And then, of course, producers came, and, you know, we set up the movie, but it gave me... the experience and the wherewithal to say, well, if I'm going to make the movie, this is how I'm going to make it now. Mm-hmm. Having gone through this very pure storytelling experience, I wanted to replicate that in my approach to filmmaking. And it also gave me the power to interview producers who were going to support that process. Because prior to this, I was pitching producers. Mm-hmm. Now they were pitching me,
right.
And I was getting to choose who was gonna get to partner with me. And that was such a privileged place to be in. And I wouldn't have been able to be in that place if it wasn't for This American Life, but more specifically, if it wasn't for Neil Drumming. Because without him seeking me out and having that agenda to bring me on the show, I don't know that Ira would have found me, because we're right. not in the same circles. He's right. not at these independent film festivals necessarily. And even my producers in the end, they would maybe not have found me. And
right.
So, yeah.
I mean, representation matters. And I use that a lot as a hashtag, but it really does.
Yeah.
I don't think we'd be here without the help of other people of color or Asian Americans to sit at this table with you or go to Sundance. So it's really helping the whole film scene, and also I think media scene. Can you also talk about, well, we're going to get into the film now. I saw you at the San Rafael screening last night, and you talked a little bit about filming in China and the hierarchy of being a director and AD. But you were a Asian American female director in China. How was that experience?
It was really great, because I feel like they don't, I mean, I may be speaking out of line here, but based on my own experience, it didn't feel like there was sexism towards a female director. It's very much a hierarchy in China. Like, I think that's what's most important, is that they see the director at the top of the hierarchy, and regardless of what gender you are, their job is to treat you as the top of the hierarchy. And so it was really great, honestly. You know, everyone acted like family. You know, my great aunt played herself
right.
in the movie, and she's not a professional actor, and everybody was just always swarming around her, asking if she needed anything. People were reading lines with her. We had people, you know, guys from the crew giving her massages. There were lots of massage trains on set, you know. So it was just this very collective unit, and it emphasized sort of the value of the collective in Eastern cultures.
Mm-hmm.
And and then I came back to shoot in New York, and it was quite a different experience. I mean, I think that might also be because I was only shooting for 2 days.
Mm.
And so it wasn't like we were building this family from day one. It was what was so wonderful about shooting in China too, is that people had their roles, but nobody ever felt like they were too good for something else. So, you know, everybody would go grab a coffee. It didn't mm-hmm. matter what position you were in.
Or just a PA job.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, and here I think so often, if I say, you know, if I go to do something, they're like, oh, like, you can't touch the camera, you can't do this, you can't do that. And there weren't that many regulations and rules. And so in some ways it was just like, do whatever you can, all hands on deck, you know?
Yeah. The lead character, Billy, is played by Awkwafina. And I noticed in the film that her relationship with her father is very different than with her mother. And it almost seems like she and the father are just as emotional together as they are apart. Can you talk about your relationship with your father? And was it pretty consistent with what the film was showing?
Yeah, I would say that my
relationship... Not to get all therapy on you, but I noticed that.
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, my relationship with my father is just a lot less conflict-ridden than my relationship with my mother.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like a lot of women would say that about their own relationships. For me, my father's very earnest, and so even with the movie, he's just proud of me. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with my mother, it's very difficult to get her to even admit to that. And there's always sort of like a, well, yes, but, you know, whereas with my father, he's just so purely joyful or purely sad. There's a simplicity to his emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that throughout the experience in my real life when my grandmother was sick and we had this wedding, is that my father's feelings were also the closest to mine. He was, mm-hmm. you know, the most Americanized of everybody in my family and the most torn because it's his own mother, you know. And so he was as torn as I was about his own American values versus his loyalty to his family.
Yeah. And talking about your family, have you all gotten closer because of the film? Has the dynamic changed at all?
I'm not sure that we've always been really close. Mm-hmm. And so it's not necessarily that we've gotten closer or not closer. The dynamic has changed, I guess. Yeah. I think it's hard because I think my parents have seen me struggle for so long, and that it's an adjustment for all of us to kind of try to survey the new landscape of what my life would look like, you mm-hmm. know, to suddenly go, okay, wait, like, so do you still need money? Do you, like, you know, like,
how can we take care of you?
Yeah, yeah. How do we take care of you now? What is our role now in your life? Wow. If you no longer need us? And it's like, well, I don't, just because you're not giving me money or right. like, which they never did, by the way, I say that, but they were not those types of parents that they wanted me to stand on my own two feet, but they were always worried, you know, and it was always, even in little ways, my mother would always be like, don't give her money. And then my dad would be like, of course not. Here's $20. Don't exactly. tell your mother, yes. you know, yep. that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so there's all of these dynamics that have been created that are now, because the change happened so quickly too, that it's like, oh, now what? Like, what's our role now? How do I talk to you? How do I engage with you in a way? And so I don't know if they see me more as an equal or if they see me more. Yeah, it's hard to describe because I think we're still going through it right now.
Yeah.
You know, they're just along for the ride in many ways, and it's as jarring for them as it is for me.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that kind of goes into my next question and my last question, unfortunately. What's the most surprising thing that has caught you off guard since we've seen you at Sundance up until now in terms of this film and the reactions or your traveling? And
I mean, a lot of stuff has caught me off guard. I think just the level of emotions that people come out of the movie with has caught me off guard because, you know, clearly for me, making this movie was a way for me to process all of the conflicting emotions that I had and feelings towards what was right, what was wrong, and do I disagree with my family? And if I disagree with them, how do I deal with that? And also, how do I deal with losing my grandmother, right? Mm-hmm. And if for me, it feels like mountains are falling and the world is imploding. And so you try to explore that in your art, but you don't necessarily expect that other people are going to feel that same way.
Right.
And I think to the degree that people feel that way is pretty amazing, but also just speaks to like how much love people have for their own grandparent. I'm sure yeah. that it brings up a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, and family in general.
Yeah. And I think we're also living in a time, you know, people really respond to that scene about where the uncle talks about the collective mm-hmm. versus the individual. And I do think that we're living in a time where people are probably really lonely and we're so divided, we're so polarized, mm-hmm. even within families that are from the same country, they may look at the world differently and some of these differences are dividing us. And I think we're all hungry for solutions, for a way to connect deeper and have greater understanding, greater compassion, mm-hmm. even if you don't understand, even if you don't agree.
Yeah. Lulu, thank you so much for being back on Bitch Talk.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Of course.
I hope you enjoy the dim sum.
I will. I'm going to eat it right now.
That was my interview with Lulu Wong, the writer-director of The Farewell, which opens today in the Bay Area, July 19th. Please buy a ticket and support this film. Lulu is, she's like a sister to the show at this point. She's family. I'm just letting her know she's adopted.
And we've known her now for almost a year.
Yeah, I mean, we've really invested in her. It's been 6 months of a relationship.
You've been stalking her a little more than I have.
Look, I'm on social media, so I don't know if it's called stalking. It just comes up in my feed, Ange, so...
When we first walked into the room at Yank Sing, the first thing we said. It was like, hey, nice to see you again. Like, yeah, she's going to remember.
She
remembered who we were.
She knows who we are. But yeah, it's one of those things, too, where now Ange and I are doing, and it's fine, independent interviews, but I always still get nervous, even though we've interviewed her before. But like,
are you kidding? I would have been nervous too, even though I have 5 million things I want to ask her.
Right, but knowing now, like the weight of this film, especially at the time we're at now, where we have a president telling people of color to go back where you come from, like it's a little more weighty than I feel like it was at Sundance.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So, saw the film twice. It's like Last Black Man in San Francisco. It's a little bit, it's not otherworldly, but it's just different.
I don't know.
It's a different experience for people to see.
I don't know that. Well, what do you mean it's like?
It's
see.
It's just so unique. How about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, okay.
That's what I mean.
I was like, they're both
even
very different.
The word unique.
They're very different experiences watching them.
It's not
them.
The same story at all. It's not the same experience.
But I think that, I don't know, I just think that she was able to capture just these little intricacies of like being in a first generation or maybe not even first generation, but living in the States
as an immigrant
and dealing with family members who aren't.
Yes.
But also just... how fucking quirky and funny, and you know what I mean? It's not just like, oh, math and funny accent and whatever your stereotypes
right.
are. Like, our families are funny also, you know, and they're sarcastic
quirky.
And assholes and the whole gamut, just like anyone else's. But she was able to capture that special Asian
flavor.
Je ne sais quoi. It's different. It's
yes.
different, same, but different, right?
Like, right.
I don't know. She was able to capture it so beautifully.
And also,
and it didn't seem like, oh, or...
It's not forced.
Can't be. It touched me deep down.
I know it did. You and John Wildman back at Sundance.
Yeah, yeah. And I really appreciate it, and I can't wait for more films like this.
How was it the second time?
Seeing it?
Yes.
So the first time we saw it, we were rushed into the theater.
Right.
And I didn't feel like I could really sink into the movie.
Right.
Because there was a lot going on.
And that's kind of how I felt. I feel like I haven't seen it again since that time, but that was the centerpiece film of San Francisco Film Festival.
Right.
So we were in the middle of all that
yes.
craziness.
Yes.
So watching it, and it's just like, I don't think I really got to absorb the movie the way that I wanted to.
Yeah.
Just because, first of all, you know, like there's the subtitle part where you have to actually really pay attention
yeah.
to what's happening. You
yeah.
can't blink.
No.
Because it's one of those things, it's like, you know, it's like when it's like for the people that watch Game of Thrones. You can't walk out of the room.
No, you can't turn your head.
Exactly.
So you won't know what's happening. Seeing it the second time around, I went by myself. Creepy. No. But it was an interesting experience the second time around, because I was sitting basically in a room full of older white people. So that was interesting in itself. But like what Ange said, it's what I wanted Crazy Rich Asians to be. Like, I wish this was the Crazy Rich Asians breakout versus Crazy Rich Asians, if that even makes sense. Just because there's more depth,
mm-hmm.
there's way more story, there's more heart. And obviously this is a very true
right.
story to Lulu, so it was heartfelt.
No, and
you know what I mean?
No, I totally see what you're saying, because right now all of these movies like the Always Be My Maybe and the Farewell, they're all getting credit, or all the credit is going to Crazy Rich Asians.
Yes.
For like opening this door.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, that door's been open. By the way, it's been open. It's just that there hasn't been opportunity. And I, for whatever reason, now there's a light being shown on people of color, Asian American stories, all kinds of different stories.
Another thing is, aside from the subtitles, it's not an Asian story.
Not at all.
Like, it's relatable to anybody. It's family. It's about loving your family and losing a loved one and not quite fitting in either world and trying to find your way in between two different worlds. Yeah. Which, it's relatable.
Yeah.
It's not just an Asian story. And the fact that it's, like, you know, told from the heart, that's what makes it relatable, because it's about being human and dealing with fucking complicated shit.
It's not an Asian story. It's more of a very authentic family story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter what race you are, it's, as a family, you relate to that
mm-hmm.
on a level.
Right. Yeah, what we're saying is you don't have to be Asian to enjoy this movie.
Yeah, but I think that's
if
why
you're not understanding what we're saying.
Well, and I
figured it out by
yeah,
now.
But
through
I
our,
just
through our analysis.
Yeah, so I connected with it because I feel like I really don't think that my family is like, oh, they're just so Asian, but I guess they are to an outsider. But you know that whatever that means to be so Asian, like. It's just my family, and
right.
I watch that, and I feel the same way.
Yeah.
So,
so please go support this film. I don't know. I think Lulu is.
She's so special.
Amazing.
And she's so fucking cute. It's ridiculous.
And I mean, she's. Dating,
I went in for
she's
the hug.
Dating one of our friends of the. Another friend.
Yeah,
of the
he
show.
Stalks me. Actually, he's been following
right,
me on
right.
vacation.
If you don't know, because we've talked about it before, she and Barry Jenkins. Are a thing, and it's adorable, and we love them as a couple, and we love Barry so much. Even though, you know what's funny, and we'll wrap up after this, but the story, because I wasn't there, if no one's heard the story, Ange interviewed Barry Jenkins for Moonlight.
Oh, here it goes.
Well, and I wasn't there for that because I was working. That was the first time you had to do an interview by yourself.
And I was not even committed to being a host at the time.
So this is the first time she had to interview someone by herself. It ended up being Barry Jenkins, who then ended up winning the Academy Award that year for Moonlight. And Moonlight is probably still one of my top five movies. But Ange interviewed him, crawled over him on a sofa, and they had a moment. That's why
I sat where I wasn't supposed to
right.
sit.
And I got a picture during the interview from a friend like, oh, look at this setup. And I'm like, why the fuck is she sitting right next to him? That's weird. Anyways, that's why
it
we
didn't
say.
Didn't feel weird.
That's the origin story of Bitch Please, because at the end, he ended up asking Ange, why do we ever say Bitch Please on the show? And she's like, no, but now
I
we
never
will forever.
Have once.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's why we end the show with Bitch Please. So that's to Barry Jenkins. Anyways. Go see The Farewell, please. Support Lulu. And don't forget, we're at bitchtalkpodcast.com. We're also at bff.fm. We are powered by GoTo Productions. And we'll see you later.
Bitch, please.